Hi, I'm Tara. No. That stays in.
That was so good. Oh, man.
Hi, I'm Melody.
And I'm Tara.
And this is Skip, Shuffle, Repeat, a podcast about compact memories in jewel cases.
We're exploring music and friendship through the artifact of CDs. Join us as we revisit the sounds that shaped our lives.
Beautiful.
Man, we're so good at this.
Yeah, because this is mostly for you and I and not for anyone else. As we've discussed many times. It's really just an excuse for us to talk and listen to our voices.
Yeah.
It's great.
To document how incredible we are at friendship.
Yeah, we're so good at it. We're so good at friendship and potentially so bad at podcasting.
And probably bad at music criticism or
like. Definitely bad at music criticism for sure.
Yeah.
If anyone's here for that, walk away. Put down whatever you're listening to this on. Listen to something else.
Yeah. There are a million other pods about music that are actually about the music.
Probably way better. All right, we're back. This is number three, episode three. So this time I decided to share with Tara, which we'll get into. I did not send it this time. We listened to this one together on vacation for Tara's birthday. And that is important because I picked Ani DiFranco's Dilate. And it's because we love Ani DiFranco.
We do.
Collectively. Mm-hmm. I would say that Ani DiFranco is a major component of our friendship.
Yeah.
She's in there. She's had many moments with us. Mm-hmm. So it felt appropriate that when we were supposed to do this podcast in person, in front of each other, instead of virtually, that like Ani would be the album choice. What'd you think of this album?
It was perfect. One thing that I wasn't sure was intentional is that this album was actually released on my birthday in 1996.
Not intentional. I did not.
Yeah. And so when I was looking through the artifact itself, it was like May 21st, 1996. And so it felt very meant to be.
I'm really good at that. I'm really good at serendipitously like bringing things that should happen together, I think.
A plus. You did it again.
Yeah. 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 Go me. Yes. I'm proud of myself.
You should be.
I am.
Yeah. I mean, I was expecting an Ani DiFranco album. Let's be obvious here.
Tracks.
So I wasn't sure which one it would be. And I think I was a little surprised that it was this album, but.
Can I ask, which one were you expecting more?
I think either Little Plastic Castles or like her first album.
But I picked this one because it was released on your birthday.
Right. Of course you did.
So now we know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why that happens.
So I think it's important that we set the scene a bit because the listening session that we had for this album was quite possibly one of the coolest moments I've had in a long time. So we were on vacation in Joshua Tree at this beautiful Airbnb in the desert with like not another house around like in sight. And we're out on the patio with the sun shining, and we put the CD into Melody's CD, like portable CD player, and we hook it up to a Bluetooth speaker and we just crank that volume like all the way up. And then we just like stood around outside. The wind was blowing and we're just like, the songs are belting, we're belting out the lyrics, and everything about it was just so moving. And of course, it takes you back like to when you first hear the songs in your life and you start like reflecting on all of the past lives, we'll say. Yeah. And it's just, it was really great. It was a perfect moment. And I'm really grateful to have had that.
I also thought about all the other moments where we have sang Ani DiFranco out loud in like in our space together. I often think of like road trips where we're listening to Ani DiFranco with the windows rolled down, just like belting out the lyrics, having the best time of our life. Mm-hmm. So it was like hearkening back to all of our memories with Ani while listening to Ani DiFranco and doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good.
It was. And of course, once again, you've kept your CD in really good condition. So
yeah, this one particularly was, if I remember correctly, there were some small like cracks in the case.
Well, okay. Yes, but I think I have to like correct you here because I'm pretty sure I caused the cracks in the case when I gave them back to you. Like they weren't there when you brought it to the birthday, I don't think. Oh.
Okay.
I think that I, in the mere 30 days that I had that CD in my possession, I destroyed it and then gave it back to you because, you know.
Yeah. Because there are no rules to our podcast. We've decided.
It's chaos. This is the chaos menu.
It is chaos. And that's okay. That's okay. That's what we're here to do. Shake it up. Keep it interesting. But yeah, it is a CD that I love and have listened to many, many, many times, but also took care of because it's Ani. Yeah, it was in really good condition. And the CD was fine, right?
CD was fine. Yeah.
Any skippies or no problems.
Yeah, it was perfect. And the booklet had all the lyrics.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Because she is not like garbage and understands that you need full lyrics in a lyric book.
Yeah. People want to sing and they want to sing the right words. Like if I'm left to my own devices without the lyrics printed for me, I will make up words and then I'll
hold
look like
me closer.
It's like
Tony Danza, right? Hold me closer, Tony Danza. Will happen instead of Tony Dancer every time.
Literally, we went to a concert earlier this year. And we were like in the third row. And it was then that I realized I had been singing the wrong lyrics because I was singing the lyrics to the person singing the lyrics on the stage.
And the mouths were not matching.
We did not say the same words. So lyrics in a CD case or in whatever, you know, media.
Fans, write into us. Let us know. Are there people that don't look at the lyrics in the lyric book, right? But it's not vinyl.
Liner notes?
CD notes. We know what we're talking about.
And that's true because we said it is true. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just curious. If anyone doesn't look at those, I think let us know because I have follow-up questions.
Yeah, but it was a very like classic 90s CD in terms of imagery, right? So you've got her like in her dreads,
multicolored dreads, right? She's like, she is a little kaleidoscopy white girl with dreads, which I don't know how I feel about currently,
but at the time it was very early 90s.
It was of a time and place, and I did not mind it then.
Yeah.
But I think I would mind it if I saw it now, probably. She's got her combat boots on.
Yep.
A lot of crouching. A lot of like cute manic pixie with mad angry vibes going on.
It's very gritty. She's like in the streets and it's all this like black, almost like slime looking on the streets and the walls. And it's kind of green and yellow and...
Obviously, this is a very 90s album, but I don't think of this as like a 90s album because she's outside of time and space. Maybe a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But then when you look at the cover, you're like, oh yeah, totally. This is a 90s album.
Right. I think that's something that'll probably come up again in our conversation, is that any time you hear her music, like the lyrics are applicable to so many different times and places. Like, that's not situated in a particular 90s experience necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, I do think her early albums have that very 90s theme, particularly for women, of being mad. Women were mad. Mm-hmm. And we were telling everyone about it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Like, yeah, because like Riot Girl, all of that was in that same, it's like contemporaneous with Ani. She just was sidestepped from that.
Yeah. She
paved her own path. She did her old Righteous Babes thing. So.
Yeah. Which we should really get into. I mean, she was really impressive with how she decided to literally be like, I'm going to go outside of the whole music system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The way that music is made, I'm not going to be about that life. I'm going to do my own. And she's like crouching down and like holding her own hand, which is interesting because she's not showing her face, right? It's kind of the opposite of what you expect from most female artists at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's not showing her face. She's not doing the like, I'm the pretty girl or I'm the fun. Like, she's not, I mean, not a pretty girl, but.
That's a little Easter egg for true, yeah, Ani fans, anyone out there.
But in the photo, she's also like, I don't know, holding her own hand. There's kind of a vulnerability in it, right? Like there's like a, she's like kind of curled up in almost a,
like the little fetus position.
Fetus pose, yeah. She's like holding her own hand, which makes it feel like she is both being vulnerable, but also like helping herself get through it, mm-hmm, right? It's not angry. This photo is not angry, right? Mm-hmm. It's definitely not like powerful in a very obvious way.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel like self-care almost, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's like, she's like, I'm going to take care of myself.
Yeah. Survival.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah. And her braids are kind of covering her, which feel a little bit like man, like armor, you know, like,
yeah. Well, and the braids are really interesting too, because either her first or her second album, she's got a buzzed head. Like she, yeah, doesn't
first
like,
album, it's a
completely opposite look. And that was, if I remember correctly, that was the front of the album, was like a profile, mm-hmm, of her with her buzzed head. And that was like, I mean, another real like 90s moment of the woman with the shaved head, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But
that was out there. That was a thing that women were doing.
Yeah.
Again, as like a statement piece, we're angry. We're not fucking around with this cute hairdos anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're being as like bare bones as we possibly can be about not being your ideal of what a female is. The whole thing, while she's still being strong, it feels way more feminine.
Mm.
Having like long hair, it's braids, but it's like long.
Yeah.
She's got a dress on, mm-hmm, with the combat boots. It's interesting that it feels a little bit like she's exploring, you know, different versions of what being a female is. And I mean, basically that is what I think makes Ani DiFranco so incredible,
mm-hmm,
is that she's constantly doing that, kind of exploring what it is to be, mm-hmm, feminine, whatever, in this world, and both the struggles but also the beauty of it throughout her albums.
Mm-hmm. And that there's no right or wrong way. It's just, yeah, a constant evolution. Then she, you can, as she demonstrates, like just navigate that as you live as a human being. There's no boundaries, and the ones that we have are constructed, right? Like it's not,
right,
finite in any way. And she, not only did she embody that in her life and her career, it, at least, you know, from what I know of it, she also just is such a, like a master poet at describing that. And so that's, I think, what makes her such a powerful force for, I would say, probably people who identify as women. But I don't think it's exclusively that.
I don't think it's exclusively that, but I think that it is people who are identifying with the female force. So if you identify as male, but you're still tapping into your feminine side, right? I do think that like that is what she brings. Mm-hmm. And that is what people who love her are like listening to her for.
Yeah, that's what they gravitate to. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, with many other artists that I listen to, where I got into their music early on, I dropped off at some point in time, right? Like I listened hard and heavy and like, I'm still such a fan about their, you know, for their early albums, but then there just comes a point where I kind of drop off. How many, just curious, like, did you follow her career going forward or like, have you listened to her latest album?
Yes, I've listened to later albums that are not in this era. But this album in particular, I think my first listen, start to finish, was that time in Joshua Tree.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. To my wow. knowledge, start to finish that particular album. Because I first started listening to Ani when I was in high school. So this is after, you know, her early years. She had already had like probably 8 albums by the time I was told that I should listen to her. And so I bought the live album Living in Clip, even though I hate live recordings on like, that's not a genre or a thing that I particularly enjoy. But for some reason, that's the album that I bought. I think it because it covered the most ground. And so I thought, if I want to understand if I should, or if I want to see if I like this artist, like, I'll try it this way.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of these songs on Living in Clip, because that Living in Clip is in 1999. And so it's right after this and Little Plastic Castles. And I think there's maybe one other that came out like right, but like all three of those albums were really heavy on that Living in Clip tour. And so when we were listening to it in Joshua Tree, like I was singing the live version, right? Where like mm-hmm. the timing is a little different. She mm-hmm. didn't have the exact lyrics. Like she, you know, embellishes other parts of the song. That's when I realized like, oh, this is not my like, my primary text or whatever for these songs is not the album. It's the Living in Clip recording. So
that's so interesting. Yeah. Because yeah. I have listened to Living in Clip. That is not an album I've ever owned. So yeah, I'm like the direct opposite, right? Like I would not know those versions of the song. Like if I heard it, yeah. I would be singing these versions instead and then be like, oh, she's,
but yeah, I definitely listened to her beyond this era. I mean, once I got into her music, I, you know, did the deep dive and listened to the early stuff. And then I think I bought the first 2 albums on CD. And then Little Plastic Castle was the one that really spoke to me. And so that's, I think, when I became a huge fan. And then I really listened to her for like maybe the next 5 to 6 years. So maybe 2006-07 is probably when I fell off. I hate to say it, but I think it's when she had a child.
Yeah, no, me too. Actually, very much so. I mean, and I think that it's important to kind of explore that and why.
Yeah.
That may be the case. Because same. For me, probably it was that she spoke to sort of a righteous anger about being a female and having to live in a world where you're treated a certain way, the expectations of that. And I'm not a mother, right? And particularly at that time, not only was I wasn't a mother then either, obviously, but at that time also was not in my viewpoint. I wasn't like, ooh, one day I'm going to be a mom. Mm-hmm. Right. I was very much like, probably not going to do that. So her transition into motherhood, like softened her in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
that I think are kind of beautiful.
Yep.
And now that I've honestly aged enough, even though I'm not a mother, might appreciate now in a way that I could not then. Right. I was still in like my 20s and just like still pretty aggressively trying to figure out how to move through the world. And motherhood was not part of that. Like, I'm still kind of pissed off. I'm still mad at like a lot of things. I'm not ready to like chill out, you know? And I am now. I'm pretty like, hey, getting older, motherhood or not, softening up a little bit is nice.
Yeah.
You just get tired, which we can talk about how tired we are all the time. All the time. But I was not in a headspace to take that version of Ani DiFranco on.
Yeah. You know? I completely agree. It's hard to state that. But it felt like motherhood at that point in my life, that felt antithetical to all that I was getting from her earlier work as like being empowered and that like, yeah, I just couldn't identify with it. And, you know, because she's such a, she really puts her soul on the page. I think it's hard to not notice some of that, like the shift, right? Because she really is sharing what she's living and breathing at that moment.
Yeah. And that's kind of her beauty, right? Like that's the reason you want to follow her. And honestly, even just having this conversation, I'm like, I really should maybe go back and look at these, you know, later albums with like a new look. Cause I fell off also in the mid aughts, right?
Yeah.
2004, 2005 is when I kept buying her albums. I kept listening to them, but it was like fizzling a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that that happened with a couple other artists where when they became a mother, I literally was like, it wasn't like, oh, I can't relate anymore. It was literally, I don't think I like your music anymore.
Mm.
And with Ani, I did not feel that way. I did not stop liking listening to her. I just could no longer relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still appreciated her. I cannot say the same for other artists who went through a similar thing, right? They were like angrier and a little more, I think, pointed with their lyrics when they were younger. And then as they got older, became mothers, got into relationships, whatever, they kind of went into what I call the VH1 phase of their life. I don't know if anyone knows that reference, but MTV kids will know what the VH1 phase is.
Speaking of aging ourselves, like that's definitely going to do it.
But I never would have said that about Ani, regardless of whether I was tracking with her, right? Like vibing with what she was putting out. I never felt like you've lost the spark. It just felt like it shifted and it just moved with how she was moving through life.
Yeah.
She was never looking to do anything but express who she was and what she was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet there were a ton of women at the same time who were like getting into motherhood, who had been whatever, who probably cherish those albums, you know?
Yeah.
Who like are like, that is the Ani DiFranco that I know and love.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. So when was the first time, or like your first listen for this album? Take us back to that time.
I'm going to be real honest. I have no idea. I have bad, I'm not great with memories. I think in general, I've been realizing this lately. So I say like I'm bad with memories. I remember a moment with you in a car driving Austin to Dallas, windows rolled down, singing Ani DiFranco lyrics. It's a photograph in my goddamn head. But I have no idea the first time I listened to this album. I don't know. I don't even really remember how I was introduced to Ani DiFranco. I know that it was definitely in college. She had music in high school. She had music out, but I just didn't know about her then. And when I search my brain to try to figure out who would have like put me on the path, I can't even figure that out. I can't even think about who was it that was like, oh, you would love Ani DiFranco. But somebody would have had to have done it. And it's so interesting because I met people later in my life who are like, I bet you're an Ani DiFranco fan. Right. So like, it was like a characteristic trait where people are like, you are definitely meant for this music.
Which says a lot. Like I don't think there are that many musicians who have that kind of like reputation or
connection to people where someone can listen to, like, if you've listened to her, you can meet someone and be like, you're an Ani DiFranco fan. And if they say no, then you're like, okay, well then you need to be.
Yeah.
Here are all the albums that I'm going to give to you because this is something that tracks in your life. You just don't know it yet.
Right.
So yeah, I feel bad. Whoever introduced me to Ani DiFranco, I'm sorry that I don't remember. I know that I was listening to Ani DiFranco when I was in Portland, when I was 19 and I did my little trip to Portland. So, I mean, it's like I have a window of time where I would have been introduced, but I honestly have no idea. Mm-hmm.
And this isn't an artist where like some of the others we've talked about, we can cite a movie or a TV show that would have spawned an interest, but Ani's not really like that. I don't know that there are a lot of her songs in other media.
There are now, but there were not then. Hmm. And the only reason why I know that there are now is because like there's a song in Greta Gerwig's, why am I blanking on the name?
What, Barbie? Frances Ha?
Keep going.
Little Women?
Oh, no, the other one. Lady Bird.
Ugh. Oh, Lady Bird. Yep.
Lady Bird in a coffee shop is listening. She's like, it's playing in the coffee shop when she meets Timothy.
Oh, shit.
Shyamalan's character. And I was like, amazing. What? That's great.
Yeah.
And I hope that other people who also love Ani had that moment while they watched that movie. But yes, it was not like her music was, she wasn't very commercial, right? Like she was doing her own thing. So, I mean, I don't think she played on the radio. 32 Flavors, I think, is maybe the only song that ever came out that she did that actually had radio play, as far as I know.
Literally. Okay. So the internet says that there are three of her songs that have been in movies and TV shows. Lady Bird is one. And then Shameless from this album is in the show Adam, or the movie Adam from 2019. Never heard of it.
Neither have I.
But they sing it at karaoke, which makes me want to see that.
Watch that, whatever it is.
And also, Adam, I want to sing it at karaoke.
a guy's name, Adam, or Adam is like the Adam bomb.
Adam, like a guy's name. And then 32 Flavors was in a Grey's Anatomy episode from 2005.
That is correct. Because I also watched Grey's Anatomy at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I did too. Like the first three seasons.
I watched like the first five or six. I stuck around longer than I should have, for sure. Yeah,
sounds like
that it. Show I think is still going on to this day.
Yeah, I think it is.
Well, that's exciting. I'm glad that I knew one of the three at the top of my head.
Yeah, the best one.
The probably. Best one. It's the best one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I literally like squealed a little bit in the theater when it happened and like looked around to see if anyone else was as excited as I was that Ani DiFranco had been in a movie. I was like, well, huh? Nobody was looking at me with the level of excitement that I had. Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, I remember seeing that movie in the theater, but I don't remember having a reaction to that moment. But I would guess I probably did. I just don't remember
it.
Because how do you not? Especially if it's in a coffee shop and it's that song.
In a coffee
like, it's
shop.
It's kind of obvious. You have to like clutch your heart and be like, oh my God, it's amazing. And then bite your tongue so you don't sing along.
And I'm assuming that we don't really know a year, do we, when Lady Bird is like, but it would have been in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
So she's that same like age-ish as we would have been, I think, in listening to that.
Yeah. Who told you? You said someone told you, like, you should know Ani DiFranco.
Yeah.
Who was it?
So I was in high school. I think I was a junior in high school. And there was this guy.
Kara's smiling very big right now for the audience who's not on video. High school, like, crushes and everything in high school is, like, heightened.
Yeah.
Which is why when you think about it to this day, all, like, hormones rush through your fucking brain and you're like, so did this guy tell you to, oh my God, I want to know this guy.
I know.
If you're single, I'm single.
He's not.
Damn it.
Right. Yeah, but he was like, I think you'd really like her. And I was like, okay. And so I got that album and I listened to it for the first time when I was in a bus with my one of my favorite people in the world. She and I were in a church musical group. Okay. We travel and perform Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar. And
of course she did.
Yeah, I mean, classic, obvious Tara shit. Anyway, and so I took that CD on one of our summer tours that year. And we did the classic best friend thing where we had the CD player and one person puts one piece in theirs and the other, and we were listening to Living in Clip and she sings Amazing Grace. And mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say it's not her finest performance of that song. And she gets a little howling, animalistic crying. I don't think it sounds great on the album. And my friend did not think it sounded great at all. She reacted very viscerally to it.
So you're voice people. So you're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So we giggled a lot and then stopped listening to it. But I went back to it obviously and became a fan, but
that's fun. Yeah. I want to know who this boy is. Thank you, whoever you are, for introducing Kara to Ani DiFranco. It's really, we could just do high school crush it who taught you about music and do you still like it? And the ones that stuck, man, mm-hmm. so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that was fun.
She's still making music.
She's still to this day. Being amazing. Yeah. She started her own album label that she was on and then she went on to produce other people, right? So even if she wasn't making music herself, she's still contributing. She will, it feels like forever be contributing to the musical scene, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And be bringing, stories and poetry and thoughts to the masses.
Yep.
And by the masses, I mean the people that know about her, because again, she never really got super commercial.
Right.
Right. I do feel like, again, it's one of those things you might say, oh, Ani DiFranco. And there are going to be people who are like, huh? What? Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why when you meet people who do, you get so excited. You're like, mm-hmm. oh, we're meant to be friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. So, Melody, question. Have you ever seen Ani DiFranco live?
So many times. So many times that I was actually trying to think about how many times and what the first times were. I'm pretty sure my very first time seeing Ani DiFranco was when my grandmother, Grandma Esther, love of my life, favorite person on the face of the planet, got tickets for us to see Ani DiFranco in a cute little venue in the hill country of Texas called The Backyard. And she went with me. It was just me and her. And it's like it's an outdoor venue, as you can tell from The Backyard. Wasn't huge. It's a pretty small little venue. And I do remember being just incredibly thankful that I had the kind of grandmother who I loved. Again, she's a special person, who not only got that I was super into this person, but then went out of her way to get me tickets. And then was like, I want to experience this with you. Mm-hmm. She really loved music and particularly like female poet voices. She was a huge Joni Mitchell fan. Like she listened to Suzanne Vega. Like she listened to a lot of female voices. We would go on road trips and listen to like all ladies almost all the time. Lorena McKenna and a lot of lady voices. And so I thought it was really special that she wanted to go with me. So yeah, that was the first time and a great time. But then, yeah, I saw her, I think, 3 or 4 times after that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I went to see her a few times. How many times have we seen her together?
I have no idea. I have one strong memory, but
well,
I'm sure there are others.
So. I know that we saw her in a venue that I don't even know is still a music venue in downtown Austin.
Yep.
I think we saw her again at Stubbs, right? Downtown Austin, off of Red River.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we would have seen her. I don't know. Maybe those are the ones. Because I feel like I would have seen her somewhere in the Dallas area too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I clearly remember those three.
Yeah.
There was a period where it's like, oh, Ani's coming into town. Okay.
Yeah. That's just what you do.
Just what you do. Mm-hmm. There are a few like people, bands that I've seen multiple times, and she's one of them. What about you? Do you remember how many times? You just said no.
No, I don't. I remember 100% remember the unknown venue in Austin. Mm-hmm. I, now that you mention it, I vaguely remember the Stubbs show. And then I remember the last time I saw her, which was in Chicago, because she played at the Auditorium Theater when I was in grad school. And that was part of my school building.
Nice.
And so my grad school friends and I went. I have very clear memories of like the Chicago show, but like I said, it was in an opera house kind of facility. So we were in the cheap seats as like grad students. And so pretty high up. And it was basically, as far as I recalled, like an empty stage with her and a stool and a microphone and a guitar, right? Like she might've brought somebody else out for part of it, but it was pretty low maintenance set. And I remember the Austin show in the unknown location being very similar. In that it was just her and a stool and a mic and a guitar.
But the Stubbs show was not like that. The Stubbs show, she had like band members. It was a little more like, I'm going to use my favorite phrase, jam bandy.
Yeah.
It was a little more jam bandy.
Yeah.
There was definitely like more musicians there at the Stubbs show.
That does sound familiar, actually.
Yeah.
But the Austin show, I remember us dancing really big, drinking too much.
Yeah.
And spending a lot of time outside smoking cigarettes.
Too much time outside smoking cigarettes. But talking about Ani DeFranco, probably.
I think
the
so.
Whole trip, because we were living in Dallas at the time, the whole trip down and up were very Ani-centric. That memory of me, like the like driving in traffic on 35 with the windows down, was from that trip.
Mm-hmm. We're young and reckless, wild, free.
She would have appreciated it.
I think so. I think she did. I think, in fact, she nodded at us when we finally walked back in to dance to the last song. She's like, welcome back, lady. You've been here the whole time making music.
Yep. That you have not been listening to.
And that venue sucked because, like, it had a patio.
It was fucking terrible.
It was like a strip mall is what I remember. Yeah. And so you couldn't hear anything when you were out on the patio. And so the door would open, you'd hear like a little bit of a song.
So multiple times watching Ani, both good and bad, various ways. She's great live. Some of my favorite songs by her are a live version of a song, you know? Mm-hmm. She's so good live. She really connects with the audience, I feel like. You know, whether you are connecting with her, she's connecting with you. She's there putting out that energy. She's whether you want to be a part of it or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
we're joking a little bit. Like, we were not that, like,
yeah. I remember we were just having a good time. We were on vacation. We were like road tripping to see Ani. I mean, I realized that like 3.5 hours away is probably, actually, it's probably like a whole lot to some people and like not enough to others.
Absolutely. But I think that's, I remember, I think it was that trip, maybe not, but I have a strong memory of having dinner at your grandmother's house. Mm. And she made a French dressing in this little glass jar. Yeah. And I feel like that was that trip, because I remember talking with her about Ani.
Yeah. And
she, yeah. So that's, it that was whole that trip was great.
Yeah.
Very special.
Ani bringing people together. Would you recommend this album? The answer is yes. To certain people.
Yeah.
But I think I would recommend Ani to certain people. But when I meet you, and I think that we've already kind of gone over this, but if I think you're an Ani person, I'm like, oh, you need to listen to Ani. And there are 4 albums that I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Her first album, Ani DeFranco, is by far still probably my favorite. It's so raw. It's so emotional and political. Mm-hmm. And because it still to this day gets you in the feels. So that's always going to be my number one. But this would be high up. And then Little Plastic Castles would be high up. And I would say for someone who I'm trying to like trap and be like, maybe you don't know that you like Ani DeFranco, but you should. Not a Pretty Girl is a good, it's like her, it's like the most commercial maybe of those albums in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the one that has 32 flavors on it.
Yeah.
And I think that like you might capture somebody with it. But those would be the 3 or 4. And of course, I mean, then you're like kind of cutting out the whole later stuff that we've already talked about not really being part of.
Yeah.
But
there is one later album that I think, I don't think it's that much later, but I think it's like the 02, 03 era, maybe 04. And it's that Reveling and Reckoning.
01.
Oh, one
right now. Yeah. There's Ani DeFranco that came out in 1990. I didn't discover it until 98, 99.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch. There's like Not So Soft, Imperfectly, Puddle Drive, Out of Range is probably the next one that I'm like, I know Out of Range.
Yep.
And like, great. I know Not So Soft and Imperfectly and Puddle Drive, but I don't have those CDs. I never bought the albums. And I never did a deep, like, it's probably, if I were to listen to it, I'd be like, oh, I know probably these songs from other things that I've listened to, but I don't know these albums.
Mm-hmm.
But then Not a Pretty Girl, Dilate, and Little Plastic Castle are all in a row.
A trifecta.
And those are like, they are the really like, holy shit, this is amazing. And then up, 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 up. I mean, I think I came in at Little Plastic Castle was kind of the newest album when I, again, whoever you were, thank you, but also I'm sorry, I don't remember you. Whenever I was introduced to Ani, I think that like Little Plastic Castle had just come out. That was like her latest album. And then after that, I bought every album when it came out up until Evolve in 2003. So up, 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 up to the teeth. Reveling Your Reckoning and Evolve were like, as they came out, I bought them.
Hmm.
And Knuckle Down's 2005. So Educated Guess, I don't even remember Educated Guess, came next after Evolve and then Knuckle Down. And I do remember Knuckle Down.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been the last one. Then like literally everything after this, I'm like, don't even recognize.
Yeah.
I did, there's a little section that's like with Utah Phillips. I definitely did do the Utah Phillips Fellow Workers in 1989. I did that one as well. But that would have been part of the like, right after Little Plastic Castle, I was introduced and I was like, if something came out, I was going to take it. I was going to listen to it. Oh, so much shouting, so much laughter. Live album. It's a good one.
Yeah, I think my familiarity is similar. Like, yeah. I do remember Educated Guess, and Knuckle Down was the last one that I have really strong memories of. So I, without looking at it, I would have no knowledge of what came after that. I bought Not So Soft, and that one I really liked.
Yeah.
That's the only, I think, point of difference. I didn't buy all of the ones. Not So Soft, Out of Range. Obviously, I did not buy Dilate.
Yeah.
But Little Plastic Castle, Reveling and Reckoning, Educated Guess. I don't think I bought Evolve. Maybe I did. And then Knuckle Down.
I also did not buy Evolve. I'm looking at the album cover. I'm like, nope. But I did do Knuckle Down.
Mm-hmm.
I did. That was the last one I bought. 14th studio album.
Wow.
She was so prolific. Like, she's just like putting out stuff constantly, you know, which is great. As someone who's a fan, you're like just consumed a bunch at the same time.
Yeah. And she definitely took some time off, you know, you can see that in the discography. Like, she was doing one a year, basically, for all of the 90s and then in early aughts. And then, like, after what, 2006, she started skipping a little bit.
But again, I think that, you know, what that stub show that we saw, I remember her being softer and kind of talking about a transition in life, you know, and being in a different place.
Did she have brass instruments at that concert?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was like a full band.
Crew. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
and it was a great show. But yeah, it was interesting because I do think that, like, she didn't play a lot of her early stuff, right? She was definitely leaning into like that time. And yeah, she was transitioning into a kind of chiller, I don't know, more jazzy, like a little fun, you know, just it wasn't as like rough, right? Around the edges. She was softening in a lot of ways.
Have we made it to our favorite section yet?
Is it our favorite section? Do we decide the top five is our favorite section?
It's my favorite section.
I think it's the favorite section. How could it not be? Yes, absolutely. We have made it. We have made it. We have arrived. I did not take any notes for this podcast. This is the time to admit that. So my top five was thrown together right before I got on. So this is very, it's a feeling, not a reflection, not a sit and like ruminate, think about it.
Yeah.
Mine's like spur of the moment. This is what I think I love. Go. Yeah. I do think it's hard because I love every song. Like as I was every time I listened to it, as I was listening to it, as I was trying to decide, I was like, oh damn, this is a good one. Oh damn, this is a good one too. Like every single song, you're like, this is a really good one. I'm going to let you go first.
Do you want, what order do you want to go in?
Let's end at the top. Let's end with that, like, the best of the best. Biggie. Okay.
So let me figure out my pages and pages of notes, because
have 0 pages. She has 8 pages.
Number 5 is a tie.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Thinking back to the fact that I don't have strong memories of ever listening to the actual album start to finish. I have memories from the live album as my like origin story with this. Right. So it's
right.
It's, I think that is also influencing my list a bit, but like, I was astounded by how many of the great songs are on this one album. Right.
Yeah.
So coming in at number 5 for me, a tie between Joyful Girl and Adam and Eve.
Ooh, okay.
I've listened to this album several times since the, you know, first listen in May. And Joyful Girl always surprises me because there's so much energy in the album and there's so much like intensity in a lot of the songs. And yeah, there's pauses and there's slower, you know, songs, but the lyrics are always so intense. And Joyful Girl, for some reason, just to me feels much more, it feels like resolution. It's like she's calming down and she's like, you know what, this is who I am and this is how I'm living my life, and there's a peace to it, and it it's almost like she's whispering the lyrics. Like, it's just,
she's grounding herself and saying, you know what, after all that, like, intense, angry emotions, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. And it's a little, you know, like, sassy in some of the lines, but it's, she's finding that, like, motivation to move on in herself. So then Adam and Eve. Okay. So one of the reasons why I like the song is because of the live version, the lyrics about, don't treat me like I am something that happened to you and that I am truly sorry about all this. Like, she is in the throes of it when she sings that song live on Living in Clip in a way that, like, you feel like it shakes you how intense that is.
Yeah. I actually, those lyrics specifically are what made it that song on my top five, Adam and Eve specifically, and those lyrics, but it's number four for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And again, this was spur of the moment, but that line in this song in Adam and Eve gets me and, like, pulls me out, and there are so many great lines.
Yeah.
So many great lyrics in this entire album that, like, fucking punch you in the gut, you know, just, like, grab your heart and squeeze it a little bit, you know, like, this is my life. This is a moment that I relate to multiple times probably in my life. And it feels like she's saying what you wish you could have told, like, 25 fucking people, or maybe just one particular person many times. So yeah, Adam and Eve was my number four. My number five was Superhero. It started when I was going through the list, and, like, it immediately grabs me on this one. It's the, and every pop song on the radio is suddenly speaking to me. It's literally like every song of her album speaks to me. Right. And that thing, her, like, calling out, like, hey, music matters. And it literally pulls you in. And I mean, again, this one, it's really hard. I could probably talk about my least favorites more than I could try to actually figure out my top. And my 3, 4, 5, I have changed the number multiple times. Cause I'm like, I don't know. They're kind of like, there's, like, the top two and then probably four or five that are all, like, on equal playing field of, I love it. And I want it to, like, I literally want to, like, crank it up and bathe in it. So yeah.
That did not make my top five.
Okay, great. I love it when we have difference of opinions. That's great. It makes me happy. If I was naked and screaming on your front lawn, would you turn on the light and come down? That fucking lyric.
I know.
It's so good. It's so good. All right. Anyways.
I agree.
All right. So that's my five and four. Superhero and then Adam and Eve. What's your four?
Okay, my four is Dilate.
Okay.
One of the things I really love about Ani's songwriting is that she's got the deep poetry, right? But then she always has these, like, sing-songy sections, right? Where she can really just vocalize. And there are parts of the song where she does that I think the buildup of the verses, and then you get the, like, oh's, just simply that is just such a release. And I like how she balances that in her songwriting. But yeah, this one I think hits me because and when I say you sucked my brain out, the English translation is I am in love with you and it is no fun.
Yeah. That's it. That line.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's my number two.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. I love this song. And that line is really one of my favorite lines to sing. It also harkens back to her first album for me. It's very acoustical. It's very, like, poetic. It is angry. It's kind of like, and it's an angry with confidence and sort of, like, self-respect. Like you don't get to treat me like shit. You should be fucking happy. Right. Like,
yeah. And it's also, like, this song's all about, like, recognizing in yourself when you're in a situation that should be something more than it is, or you think it should be, and it's just not. And you're like,
And you have the power to walk away from it.
Right. And recognizing right? that and be like, no, I am in control of this. I'm not just going to sit here and be passively like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's literally like taking control of your situation in love, right? Like in relationships.
Yeah.
Right. Like understanding that A, you don't need somebody, even if you feel like you do, even if you feel like they're the last person you'd want to walk away from, but you don't need them mm-hmm. and you're good enough. She's so good at like bringing you back to like your self-worth. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're singing those lyrics to yourself, it's a reminder. You're like, I am good enough. I am strong enough. I am all that I really need. If I can allow myself to be all that I really need, you know, I fucking love this song. I listen to it a lot. It's one of the songs in the album that I will just replay. I'll just be like, maybe one more time. It's a repeatsies.
A repeatsies.
I love a repeatsies. All right. So that was your number four was my number two.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep everyone up.
So what have we done on yours? We've done five, Superhero. Four, and two.
Yeah. Yeah. We're at three for you.
Okay. God, my top three are real, like, what mood am I in at the very moment that you're asking me?
Yeah.
So my number three is Napoleon.
Okay. Yeah. I thought about that one.
And I think we've already kind of talked about how she really paved her own path in her career. And this song just sums it all up. It's basically in conversation with someone who chose the mainstream path in their mm-hmm. career and kind of regretted it for reasons, you know. And this song I've used a lot as my life has explored various career paths, and I've had to say bye to some that mean a lot to me, and I've started new ones that I didn't expect I would like and then ended up loving, you know. And so
yeah,
kind of been this weird route, and this, you know, I've been both sides of this song at various points. And so I think that's a really interesting thing for me to recognize. But like, I don't know, it gets me like really energized in a, like, I told you so kind of a way, whether that's to me or to somebody else or whatever. It just gives me that space to call someone out for thinking they're hot shit and forgetting everybody else that like helped them along the way.
Yeah. I love that. Napoleon does not make my top five.
Oh.
But I have had one career my entire life. This is what I do. This is it. But it totally makes sense why that resonates for you. I like it. Good.
I think sometimes we all struggle with like feeling that we're very self-important and like we are this, you know, the main character of our lives. And so clearly we should be some main character of somebody else's life.
Right.
And this,
if we were to walk away, you would be destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this song has that kind of tinge to it. It's like a check of like, okay, I'm not that important to every other, you know, person.
Yeah.
It's also one, like something that'll come up in another song is that Ani really empowered me to say, fuck you, like musically. And I've really tried to think back to see if there's another musician or artist that used profanity in a way that wasn't just gimmicky, like that actually felt empowering and like purposeful. And I still can't find anyone before Ani that taught me that like there is an impact to using this language in music that is not just for, you know, the shock value, right?
Right.
And
right.
This song has that.
Yeah, I like it.
What's your three?
My number three is Shameless. It's a jam, is part of it. I love to move to it. Like it's like it gets me hyped, you know? I mean, she even does it like, she's amping herself up in the song. And so it is very much one of those that I'm like, when I hear it, I get like, I don't know, like I almost want to go into like a pit, you know, like I'm like, let's go, let's get this, let's do it. It feels very powerful. Even like just the music of it feels very powerful. And again, you know, we've talked about how like all of her lyrics who she was in particular just made you feel powerful. I think that's a very consistent thing with her, but the music doesn't always do that, right? Like it's sometimes very acoustical and very like emotional and very chill even. This one is like, get up and stomp your fucking feet. Like that's the vibe, get it. Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah, this is my number one.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, she's got like, everything you said is true. But she blends the like rambunctiousness of it with the we're in a room without a door. Like it's very sing-songy in those parts, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And so I like how she combines those two styles. Yeah, I wrote down it's rhythmic and sassy and still imminently singable at high volumes in the car.
Yeah.
About the risks that we're willing to take and the consequences we're willing to endure for authenticity. This is what I wrote in my notes.
Way to go, Tara's notes.
Whenever I wrote this, I was feeling very inspired by this, but like, yeah, I love it in so many ways, but I think one of the hallmark ways is like that she's talking about her own or the character, right? The character is like sexuality and figuring out your likes and dislikes and how society puts a lot of shame on that, like full stop, mm-hmm, just that, not even getting into what those likes and dislikes might be. Just the mere fact of exploring them is shameful. And she sticks the knife right in the heart of that. And I really love that. I think it's really empowering. So number one, we'll sing this every day. It's so good.
I love it. I love that it's your number one. Wait, so what's your number two?
My number two is Untouchable Face.
That's my number one.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny whenever your favorite song is the first song. Cause I always feel like, is it just bias for like, you know, you listen to the first song. If you listen to albums, you listen to the first song more than you listen to the last song. We've already talked about how on some albums, you don't listen to the last song at all. And I get it. I get it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It happens.
But I fucking love this song, particularly, I mean, this goes back to your talk of like using, you know, curse words, like language that other people might not touch to like literally be pointed. And as a perpetual single person, I do feel like the act of having a crush on someone that you're kind of, again, it goes back to the thing of like, you could make yourself feel bad, right? You could be like, oh, they don't like me. And that's my fault somehow. And like, I'm not pretty enough or smart enough or funny enough or clever enough or whatever the enoughs are. But this song is like, no, mm-hmm, fuck you for not seeing how great I am. And it's so empowering. It just, again, it makes you feel both like it's okay to have a crush. It's okay to like love someone who doesn't love you back, but it's more important to be like, again, I'm better. I'm good. I don't need your validation. I don't need your love. I don't need any of it, but I might be a little angry that you haven't figured out how fucking great I am. It's so good.
I know.
Like every line in it makes me happy. Every line in it, when I sing it, makes me feel so good. And it makes me, it's like, I relate to it. Every line, when I sing it, I honestly think of somebody. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably thinking of a few different people as I'm singing it, depending on my mood or what's happening. But like every line fits into my life in a moment where I'm like, I'm really singing this, not with Ani, but to this person that needs to hear me say, you missed out. You didn't get it. Also, I think it was the first time I ever heard the word vying, and I love that word. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I heard it and being like, I looked it up because I love words. And I was like, oh, that's a good word. It's a really good word that you don't hear enough, you know, in general. Anything to add?
Honestly, no. I mean, I think you've covered it. There's certain lines that like always ping me in a way. One that I really like about how she's framed this, just to emphasize your point, is that she's not even like assigning fault on the new relationship or whatever, right? The like, I think you two are forever, you're perfect together. And like, it's not even about that. Like, it's not a jealousy thing. And I think that's such an important point of distinction that gets lost in a lot of songs about like unrequited love or breakups or whatever, is that, oh, they're just jealous of blah, 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 and bullshit, bullshit. And she's like, no, that's like literally not at all. Like, y'all are perfect, but fuck you still, you know?
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that perspective.
Yeah. And I think it's, again, it comes from like reclaiming yourself in a world, I think, that asks women to feel less than for a variety of reasons, and puts sort of like the impetus of being lovable and attractive and wanted and all those things, it really gets put on us to do that work, to say like, no, I'm good enough as I am.
Mm-hmm.
The whole song isn't even, it's not even about the guy, right? It's not even about the person, that the unrequited love, the thing that like you're wanting and you don't, it's not about that. It's literally just about you saying, I recognize these emotions that I have for you, and I know that we're not going to be together, and I could pull that and internalize it and make myself feel like that's on me, and that's because I'm not doing something that I should be doing, and this is the rejection of that notion, right? Like that doesn't exist. It shouldn't exist. It's about being like, no.
And even the struggle of that, the struggle of rejecting that, like,
right.
So good. It's great.
Yeah. And in this, again, I think she does that thing that you're talking about. She does in other songs where like, she moves through like styles a little bit. Like a song will like start out kind of soft and then get angry and then get soft again and then get sing-songy. Like she does this thing. So as you move through the song, you move through different emotions because she's pulling you with the like tone and style of the music.
Yeah. A solid top five all around.
Yeah. The whole album.
I know. It's good.
We didn't even talk about Amazing Grace.
Okay. Well, see, we haven't even talked about some of the like the controversial picks on this album, but like that's one for you. Amazing Grace. You're like not into it.
I am not into it. I skip it. Often,
yeah,
when I listen to this album, I often am like, nope, I am not a fan of that song,
yeah,
in general. And I don't have any like emotional tie to it other than it's a little too, I don't know, it's weird because I think it's a gospel song, right? I have no religious like background or like I have none of that. I really mm-hmm. did not, I was not raised in that world. And so I don't have that connection. And I always consider it, whether it is or not, a very nationalist song.
Mm.
And I don't even know why. And I should explore that and figure out why I feel that way. But it pulls up like religion and nationalism for me. And both ideas I reject pretty, like my whole body is like, ooh, no, we're not doing that. That sounds neat. Not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that is it. That's fascinating. I want to know more about that connection for you, because I do think that there is a lot of like Christian hymn influence in our like national narrative. So it's not super surprising, but I would be curious just to know what other songs do that. And also just from your perspective of not like being church affiliated, you know, like how those appear for you. That's really interesting.
I'll give it a think and try to come up with some other ones. But
it's funny that you say that though about the song, because I was, I agree. This song is not one that has a place on this album. Like, I don't think it makes sense within the rest of the
song. Really doesn't. It feels weird and out of place.
And that's my main beef with it. It's like, what, like, why? Just say why it's here, you know?
Yeah.
But
would be something to Ani. Like, I would love to know what her response to that question and critique would be, right? Like, mm-hmm. why did you place this song in the middle of this album? It's in the middle. It's like, yeah. And, you know, again, someone who doesn't have a reference point for this song, I think complicates it for me, but I think it could make complicated even more if you did have a reference point for this song, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. If you had something that you're like, oh, this song evokes all these things for me, it still feels weird in the middle of everything that's going on in this album. I don't know.
Yeah. But I thought it was also interesting that you mentioned the nationalist thing, because the memory that I have with it now is about President Obama singing it when he gave the eulogy, like to that might reinforce the connection with nationalism, just because that is such like a moment in our more recent history. So off the pod, we were talking about Janelle Monáe, and like she has on her first album, a song that is the similar thing as Amazing Grace on this album to me. And it's, she does a cover of Smile.
Oh yeah.
Again, I think it's like somewhere in, I don't think it's at the end. I think it's somewhere in the middle of the album. And every time I get to that, I'm like, what are we doing now?
Right. Like, why?
Why is there a cover just like tossed in the middle? And I, you know, again, we both love Janelle Monáe. Like that's, it's not a criticism of her.
Yeah. It's going back to the, like, what was your purpose in putting this in here?
Yeah.
Because if you were doing a cover in the middle of your own original songs, there's gotta be a reason, right? There's gotta be like a, oh, I felt like this connected to the rest of the album in this way, but like the audience doesn't, like we, I mean, we're not privy to that.
Yeah. It doesn't come across. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real weird.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Janelle Monáe.
The other song that I think deserves a little bit of airtime is, I think it's the second song, the no,
out of me, onto you.
Yes, that's what it's called. Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. There's something about that song. It's just the grooviness of it, and it's got that funk, and it's got that hint of aggression, and like reclaiming my time.
It's not a hint. It is.
You aggressive. Don't think her yelling no is a hint?
It is aggressive. It's another like stomp your fucking feet. Like you want to put on combat boots.
Yeah.
To listen to that song.
I know.
Your entire body moves with like a, like, oh, it's like you're, again, you're like suddenly transported into a mosh pit for some reason.
Yeah.
Aggression.
Okay. Do we have any
bonus tracks?
That's it.
Yeah. I took no notes. Man, Ani, I honestly don't know. I don't think I do. I'm not sure that there is an artist who I, God, it's going to sound terrible, but think is as genuine as she is. Like she, I mean, obviously all artists are, they're all putting their own work out there. They're putting their voice out there. They're like being vulnerable with you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she gets, again, I think the female experience in the context of how society views you and how you are supposed to then internalize that and view yourself. Mm-hmm. She like gets it and then takes it and is like, no, in a way that I don't know anyone else does. Other mm-hmm. people scratch the surface of it and will like touch on it. Tori Amos, for sure. There are a couple albums that do that a little bit, but I wouldn't even say Tori. I mean, I don't think there is anybody. Regina Spektor is another one that was written down as like, kind of, but I don't think there is. I don't know. Do you have anybody?
I thought of a couple that are not like exact copies, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think for like a similar era artist who has evolved to be more like Ani, I think I would say Fiona Apple. I think her more recent stuff is grittier, much more reflexive. And
I love Fiona Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Probably is my, I mean, I love Fiona. I like right now, she's my bucket list. Like if there is a bucket list of people that I have not seen live that I want to see live and will like spend any money and go wherever I need to go to see her live, it is Fiona Apple at this point. Like, that is my, like, will go above and beyond. I like every album. Unlike Ani, I love every album, every song of every album, every side song of every album. But she has a lot less, you know? But I do agree that she is very honest about how she is changing. And again, I think she does deal with the same, like, being a female in a world that tells you to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you're like, no. And yeah, she's gotten a little less commercial and a little angrier. Like that whole, yeah, like, where she's basically like, you told me to come to this party. I didn't even want to come to this party. Like, I'm not going to shut up. I'm going to be loud and say what I need to say.
Yeah, that's it.
Don't kick me under the table. Like, you asked me to come here and I said I didn't want to. So now I'm going to say what the fuck I want. Mm-hmm. Those vibes for sure. Good choice.
Yeah.
Bonus track recommendation.
Thank you.
I agree.
Yeah. I'm improving from my, our first episode where I had zero. I actually thought about it. And I have a couple more. So the other, folks that I would recommend to someone who is interested in a powerful female storyteller. So maybe not the same musical vibe, but, still pushing boundaries. I would say Phoebe Bridgers or Lucy Dacus, like,
yes,
that crew. You think about the lyrics and like the topics that they're dealing with. They are pushing the limits of what they are told to do. And so I think that they're similar. It's a different era, but it's, yeah, I think they're speaking to that same experience.
Also great recommendations.
Thank you. You're
doing so good. I love that this time I'm like, I got nothing. And you're like, I got it all.
I got it. I got you covered. Welcome. Yeah, you are. Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. We are a team. We share resources and energy. And then the last recommendation I have is slightly biased because it's a friend of mine, a friend from college. We were in the same voice studio and she went on to write, like, I think she has 3 albums out. And she's great, but she is a like supremely talented guitar player. And she has the same kind of like control over her voice to create unique vocals. And so sometimes she can get that like howling sound, and she can also do this really light, fluttery, vibrato filled lyrics. And she's really incredible. Her name's Mariana Sokol. And I think she's putting out a new album.
How do you spell Sokol?
Sokol.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think of her sometimes when I hear Ani sing, I'm like, oh, Mariana kind of sounds like that. So hopefully Mariana appreciates that connection.
And if you don't appreciate the connection, let us know. Call in.
We'll get you
on. Just call Tara basically and leave a message for her.
Yeah. Great. Good idea.
We'll play it.
Yeah, it'll be great content.
Great suggestions. Mm-hmm. Everyone check all of those out.
Okay, so we're wrapping up here. So we're wrapping up, but like there's a lot we didn't cover about Ani DiFranco, the legend. And we touched a little bit on like the Righteous Babes records, but that's definitely a topic for further reading if anyone is super interested in learning about independent music studios. She broke some molds there. And so anything else, Melody, you'd add that we didn't get to cover in depth?
No. I also think that there will be opportunity in the future because, again, not the last Ani DiFranco album we will cover. So I think there's time to talk about more later. Thank you for listening. As always, we appreciate you.
All right. Well, sounds good. Good CD choice.
Until next time, keep listening to albums. Listen to CDs.
Put it on repeatsies.
Put it on repeatsies. T-shirts. Until next time.
Sounds great. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.